And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Friday. Kind of a yucky Friday weather-wise. It's gray. It was wet earlier, although we haven't had a whole lot of rain here in the Butler area for a few hours now. Looking at radar, we see a little bit of rain north of Butler and up along the I-80 corridor. There'll be plenty more coming today. Temperature has climbed into the upper 60s, so that's not a problem. It's just not a real pretty day. Hey, tomorrow is Stamp Out Hunger Day. We're going to be talking a little bit later on the program with the postmaster of the Butler Post Office. Matt Kucinich will be here. We'll get all the details on the Stamp Out Hunger Day. We also have candidate chats today. In fact, sitting right here in the studio with me right now is one of the candidates for judge in the Court of Common Pleas here in Butler County on Election Day coming up pretty soon. Nicole Thurner is with us. Nicole, good to see you. Nice to have you here today.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate you having me and allowing me to speak and kind of have the listeners get to know me.
Election Day is May 21st. I imagine it's been a busy couple of months for you. Huh?
It has been. It's been a whirlwind. Very busy, a lot of knocking on doors, meeting people, going to events, but I wouldn't trade it for the world. It's been a wonderful experience.
Well, let's start out by, because some of our listeners will know you, many will not. Mm-hmm. Why don't you tell them a little bit about just who you are, Nicole Thurner?
Thank you. So I'm a local attorney. I have my own practice in Valencia, Middlesex Township. I practice primarily in family and juvenile law. However, I maintain a general practice. I bought out the firm in 2017 from my predecessor, Timothy Silva, and he primarily did civil litigation, estate planning, administration, and real estate transactions. So mm-hmm. when I joined the firm in 2015, I had brought a family and juvenile dynamic to the firm and maintained that practice, but also was able to learn from him on some of the other areas of law. I live in Adams Township. I have two pets, and I play soccer in my spare time. I like to do photography and painting as well, so I like to keep myself busy.
Are you a Western Pennsylvania native?
I am. I grew up in Washington County with my parents. My entire family's from the South Hills area. Mm-hmm. I do have extended family up here in Butler. My grandfather actually grew up going to Pullman Park and watching the baseball games and those sorts of things. And recently I was contacted by a distant cousin of mine who lives in Adams Township. I didn't know they were in this area. So it's been a really wonderful experience getting my name out there, connecting with family I didn't know was here. You know, it's been really cool.
Where'd you go to school?
I went to Ohio State University for undergrad and in Columbus, and I stayed there for law school. I went to Capital University Law.
Mm-hmm. And you began your career clerking, I believe, did you not?
I did. I started in Ohio first, so I'm licensed in both Ohio and Pennsylvania. I started working for a family law firm in Ohio as well as for the county, Franklin County. I worked for their civil stalking protection order unit. It's very similar to our protection from abuse division here. Mm-hmm. And I then wanted to be closer to family. My uncle has a law firm in Cranberry. Put a bug in my ear that one of the judges was looking for a law clerk, and I decided to apply for that job. I accepted the position, you know, and I moved over here in 2014, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is kind of a common practice for young attorneys, right, to do some law clerking for a while.
It is. As a clerk, you get to see the other attorneys presenting their cases and kind of get a feel for what litigation is and what that courtroom aspect is to be like. You also do a lot of the legal research and writing for the judge. The judge a lot of times will tell you to go research a particular issue that maybe there needs some clarification on. So there's a lot of writing memorandums of law for the judge to consider for their opinions. So I was a big part of that process while I was a clerk.
You even see this in the appellate courts and even in the U.S. Supreme Court.
Exactly. You the know? Research and writing aspect doesn't stop.
Yeah. Many of the justices, sitting justices right now, were law clerks for previous Supreme Court justices.
That's exactly it. Yep.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about what you might do if, in fact, you are elected to judge. There's a vacancy on the Butler County Court of Common Pleas with the departure of former Judge Marilyn Horan, who's now on the federal bench. So there's a vacancy. So the election on May 21st, it's this is not a primary. This is the real thing.
No, actually, there's a special election May 21st. So it's a weird election because we have, in some districts, we have the Brian Ellis's seat is up as well as the Senate seat. So mm-hmm. those particular positions are going to be like a general election in May. However, ours is actually a primary election.
Oh, so the winner will still have to stand in November then, huh?
Correct. So it depends. We could, one candidate could take both the Republican and the Democratic ticket and be done in May. However, if one takes the Republican, one takes the Democratic tickets, then we'll move forward to November.
One
correct.
Of the few seats under Pennsylvania law where candidates are allowed to cross file.
Correct.
Judicial candidates, and I think school board, I think, is the only other one.
I think you're right, yes.
Yeah. It's likely, but not a foregone conclusion, that the judge who's elected this year will be a family law judge. Can you talk a little bit about that? What attracts you to family law?
Sure. I think you're correct that is the rumor, if you will, that's where the person who's elected will be. And I say that just because I think it's really important for the candidate to have a wide variety of experiences so that they can adjust and be comfortable in any areas of law, because we don't have divisions here in Butler County. We have particular judges sitting on particular benches, but we don't actually have formal divisions. So at any point in time, I could be given a criminal case, a civil case, orphans court, which would be a lot of the estates that come through. So it's important to understand those other areas of law as well and be able to be comfortable adjusting to that. That being said, I do really enjoy working with families. That's where my passion is, primarily with juveniles. I'm very, very passionate about that area of law. I do a lot of work with family custody, divorce, those sorts of things, but I also am a supervising attorney for Children and Youth Services when it comes to the parent advocates. I'm on the Family Engagement Initiative with it's a statewide initiative that's trying to better the child welfare system in mm-hmm. our state. So that's, like I said, where my passion lies and where I would really hope that I would be seated if I'm elected.
You think there ought to be some changes in the way the current court system is run here in Butler County?
I think it's important to understand the role of a judge. So the person that's elected has the ability to control what happens in his or her own courtroom. Outside of that, it's up to the administrative judge to implement different policies, procedures, anything outside of our realm of our own courtroom. Like I said, it's kind of outside of our hands. Mm-hmm. That being said, I think it's really important to make sure that there's efficiency in the courtroom. I've seen things on both sides of the bench, right? As a law clerk and as a litigator, I understand that efficiency really matters. And I think that I'm an extremely hard worker. I would make sure that orders get out on time. I would make sure that people are heard, that hearings are scheduled on time. But to help that, I think there needs to be other things implemented with helping the distribution with the caseloads. So there's a lot of times we have what's called motions court. So if there's an emergency that pops up or an issue that pops up while a custody case, for instance, is pending, you can take a motion to the judge and ask for a hearing for special relief because there's a dispute of facts and there's an issue that you want the judge to resolve in the interim. And I think a lot of that takes up a lot of the court's time and could probably be better serve through a mediation process. So I think that's important to try and implement something like that. And it would help our flow of the caseloads and not bombard the judges so much with all these small hearings that, like I said, might be able to be resolved in a mediation. I also think that we have three wonderful programs with the Veterans Court, the Drug and Alcohol Court, and our Behavioral Health Court. And our adults in our communities really benefit from those programs. We're really missing a demographic, though, with our juveniles. And I think that, again, that's where my passion, my experience, and my skill set would come in, where we could implement a behavioral health court for juveniles. I think we could get grants. I've already talked to some of the grant writers. We could get grants for this program, so it would be of no cost to the taxpayers. There's a lot that needs to go into it and a lot of consideration on how to figure out the logistics of that, but I think that's a benefit that I would bring to the bench. I have these ideas. They work for our community. I understand the community issues, and I understand how I can make an impact from the bench in helping our community members.
Have there been juvenile behavior courts set up in other places?
I have not seen one in Pennsylvania, but across the nation, yes. And they've been extremely successful in providing support systems for juveniles that otherwise they might not have at home. It helps them. I've seen the studies show an increase in graduation rates, decrease in truancy, decrease in behavioral issues in the schools. I think part of what would have to happen is having a collaboration with behavioral health professionals such as mental health therapists, counselors, those sorts of things, and maybe juvenile probation, and making sure that everything's working collaboratively for the benefit of these juveniles. But it's certainly an area that I think in a demographic that really needs that assistance and that support.
We're talking, if you've joined us a few minutes late, maybe just got in the car, turned on the radio, we're talking with Nicole Thurner. She is a candidate for judge on the Court of Common Pleas here in Butler County in the upcoming primary, May 21st, which is not all that far off now. It'll be a week from this coming Tuesday.
About 10 days.
Can you talk, Nicole Thurner, a little bit about what you think are important qualities that a judge should have?
Absolutely. I think the judge needs to have a good temperament, needs to be open-minded, courteous, have a strong work ethic, needs to be ethical. Understanding. I think all of those are really important qualities of a judge. I think Judge Marilyn Horand, and I said this at the meet and greet that we had at BC3, but she left huge shoes for all of us to fill, whoever's elected. She was an amazing role model for not only attorneys, other judges, people in our community. She is what exemplifies what a judge should be. So I think it's really important to make sure that whoever's elected has all of those qualities and that can demonstrate those qualities both on the bench, in their professional life right now as a lawyer, as well as in their personal life. So those are qualities that I believe make a really good judge.
Will your name appear on the ballot as Nicole Thurner? Is that the way people see you?
Yes, absolutely. It'll be on both the Democratic and the Republican ticket, and I am number 4 on both tickets. So you'll see everybody else, and then me. I'm last on the list.
That's a good point to make, because it does get a little confusing in a primary, especially this year, because we've got special elections and all kind of stuff. But if you're either Republican or Democrat, You can vote for judge. I always wrap up our candidate chats. Time goes so quickly. Always wrap up by giving candidates a chance to kind of summarize and, in so many words, say why you think people should consider voting for you on May 21st. So can I have your thoughts on that as we wrap up our chat here?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Dave. And we kind of already touched on it, but I just want to stress the importance of a candidate's temperament. It is so important for a judge to maintain a judicial temperament, to be open-minded, courteous, fair, demonstrate a strong work ethic, and set positive ethical examples for other attorneys, litigants, and people in our community. Judge Horan was all of these things when she was on the bench here in Butler, and she is the example of how a judge needs to carry himself or herself. And despite a lot of the negativity that has surrounded this race, I have maintained a judicial-like temperament. I have kept my composure, and I continued and still continue to work hard every day for our clients and our community. that work ethic and dedication will never change. My work ethic, dedication, and ability to handle adversity while maintaining a judicial-like temperament is what makes me an excellent candidate for this position and is what will make me an excellent judge. So I'd appreciate all of the listeners to consider and vote for me on May 21st. And I appreciate you having me on the show to allow me to kind of, you know, just talk to the listeners and allow them to get to know me a little bit more.
That's our only purpose when we do candidate chats, give people a chance to hear what a candidate has to say and hopefully make a better informed decision when they go to the polls.
And that's extremely important. Thank you, Dave.
Nicole Thurner, candidate for judge on the Butler County Court of Common Pleas in the upcoming May 21st election. We'll take a break. We're scheduled to chat next with the postmaster at the Butler Post Office, Matt Kucinich. Tomorrow is the day for the Stamp Out Hunger campaign. Maybe you got something in your mailbox over the last couple of days. A little postcard, did you get that? We'll talk about that with Matt coming up here in just a couple of minutes. Back with more on the Friday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR right after these words. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location downtown Butler to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. Time for a checkup for your pet. We recommend Suburban Animal Clinic. Or maybe Fido or Tabby is not feeling so well. Suburban Animal Clinic, a small animal veterinary practice located Route 8 south of Butler at the intersection with Thorncrest Drive. It's about 5 miles south of Butler. Suburban Animal Clinic, in the spirit of Dr. Dennis Damon. Their services include wellness checks for your pet, of course, also emergency care. They have laser therapy, dental available, also prescription diets. You know, one of the things that are problems for a lot of our pets these days, being overweight. Microchipping, they can handle that as well. Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, south of Butler. If you're headed south from Butler toward Pittsburgh, as soon as you pass all the auto dealerships, start looking on your left. That's Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8 south at Thorncrest Drive. Welcome back, folks. Nice to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program on this Friday. We're going to be talking about Stamp Out Hunger, a campaign that's been going on for some time with the U.S. Postal Service, and we have two people here to talk about it. First of all, the postmaster from the Butler Post Office, Matt Kucinich. Matt, good to see you again.
Good afternoon, Dave. Good to see you, as always.
Nice to have you back, and you brought a letter carrier with you today.
I did bring it. I didn't get to grace you with Jack Hussison's presence today. He's over at the stamp show. If anybody wants to purchase stamps, we've got our stamp show going on over at Tanglewood here today, so he's anchoring that for me. So I brought Sue Hoover. She is actually the woman behind the food drive every year since I've been here in Butler. She takes care of it all, so you went right to the source. I don't even know if I should be here, to be honest with you, Dave.
Well, Sue, nice to have you here today.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me here.
The letter carriers across the United States are involved in this Stamp Out Hunger campaign, right?
Yes, it is a national food drive, yes.
So what happens? What do we do tomorrow if we want to participate?
Well, we have a unique situation where we go to every house every day, so we are able to pick up your food at your house, at your mailbox. Mm-hmm. So we just want you to leave it all non-perishable items by your mailbox, or you can even leave it, if you see a mail truck sitting somewhere, you can leave it by the mail truck and they'll pick it up there. And we will bring it back and distribute it to the local food cupboards.
I have had questions from people, and I tend to get these every year. Does this apply to everyone? What about people who live out in the country? Is it only in the city? Where does this take place?
Everyone should have gotten a postcard from us letting them know that we are participating. Unfortunately, not all post offices do participate.
Okay.
But if you've got a postcard, you can also call the post office and ask, you know, your local post office and ask if they are participating in the food drive.
Okay. So if you got one of the little postcards in the mail, I've got mine right here, I brought it with me, then you know that your post office is participating and your letter carrier will pick this stuff up.
That is correct.
I always worry about the letter carriers because sometimes, I mean, I've left cans out there and stuff. It's pretty heavy.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely a rough day for us. You know, it's hard, a hard working day, but it's one day a year, and, you know, it's for a very good cause. And so everybody pitches in and wants to give back to the community because all this food stays in our community. So we're helping each other here.
So this goes to, like, local food banks and stuff?
Right.
Do you have any idea when this started? This, I know, it's been going on for quite a few years.
27th year.
Yes, in 1993, I think, is the first year. Yeah, food drive began in 1993, and we've collected 1.6 billion pounds of food across the country since 1993, with 71.6 million pounds last year. Put that in perspective, Western Pennsylvania District, which we cover the panhandle of West Virginia, all the way out to State College area, and if you draw a line straight up to Erie, that's all us too. About 1 million pounds of food for us, and Sue has our figure locally for last year,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, we had 16,000 pounds here in Butler.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Very good. Incredible.
And this is all officially sponsored by, it's the National Association of Letter Carriers, do I have that correct?
Yes. Yes, in partnership with several other, with the United Way, with the Alliance for Nonprofit Resources, AFL-CIO, we have a lot of partners. Kellogg's joined us this year, too, to help sponsor, which really helped us.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people involved.
A lot of cornflakes there.
Yeah.
So, folks, you know, if you can see your way clear, for goodness sakes, set out some stuff for your letter carrier. And I suppose most people know when their letter carrier comes by, right? Some folks it's early in the morning, some folks it's mid-morning, some folks it's early afternoon, you know. Just make sure you have it out there in time, huh?
Right. Try to get it there, you know, make sure it's there before you're, what you're used to getting your mail, yes.
Could you, if need be, Matt, take it to the post office?
Absolutely. Yes, yeah, you can take it right in the front. Tomorrow, you know, the window closes early on Saturdays. We're done at noon. But if you bring it around to the back door, ring the buzzer, we'll be more than glad to take it. Mm-hmm. You can even just place it there on the dock as long as it's in a bag, you know, so that it doesn't spill everywhere. We'll be more than glad to take it from you.
And everything collected here in Butler County stays local, huh?
Right. The Alliance for Nonprofit Resources took over Community Action. I don't know if you're aware of that. The county used to run Community Action,
mm-hmm.
and it was taken over by the Alliance for Nonprofit Resources. So we take everything up to that warehouse, and they distribute it to all the food banks for us.
Well, it's a great program.
Yeah.
Something that letter carriers don't have to do, even though they do visit your house pretty much every day. By the way, speaking of that, is it, we're still 6 days a week now.
I knew you were going to go there this
They floated that trial balloon a couple of years back about cutting out a day or two.
Yeah, yes. Ms. Brown was actually by Mr. Donahoe, the PMG at the time. He had tried to go that route, but then, you know, Amazon came along and things were a little bit better for us for a short time. But, you know, we're kind of back in the middle of some financial crises. The financials just came out today. I think we are posting about a $2 billion loss year to date, you know. So not very good financial footing that we're going on with the Postal Service going forward. But Ms. Brennan, our current Postmaster General, I believe on May 1st she met with the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, and she says in 60 days she's going to propose a plan for five-day delivery again. So it's going to rear its head again. I'm sure most people have probably seen it on Fox News or in Wall Street Journal, you know, type of stuff online or in their papers. You know, it didn't sound like it was going over very well with the congressmen that were on the committee, but I think at some point we really need to look at what we do as an organization and what we're still able to provide. You know, one caveat to that five-day plan was a seven-day package delivery. So, you know, we'll still be out there on Saturdays and Sundays delivering packages, but, you know, we might not conceivably be delivering mail on Saturday.
I was going to say, it's probably going to be Saturday.
That makes the most sense. The less impact to the businesses and you know, the customer. Most people are kind of relaxed on Saturday. Sue will probably tell you there's probably a lot of mail sitting in boxes on Monday when she's out there delivering.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it's something that, you know, I don't think maybe we want to take away a day of service, because that's why we're still trying to keep that package delivery going on Saturday and Sunday. But we do have to try to figure out ways to get around the financial hardships that we're just facing, you know, with the change in e-commerce and the shift to email and electronic bill paying, it's been really difficult for us to come up with ways to bridge that gap when we're still operating in a business model that is from the 70s and 80s. It's just not applicable to today's world.
Well, refresh my memory on this. The Postal Service operates independently, doesn't it, from the federal government? That was, I think they were separated decades ago.
I was saying that, like, 1976, the Post Office Department is what it used to be called. It was a cabinet-level position. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, right around late 70s, early 80s, they reorganized and it became a independent government agency with government oversight. But as far as for, you know, running our operations, everything is funded by the ratepayer, meaning we don't take any tax dollars. Every stamp we sell, every package we mail, all that pays our rates. We receive no tax dollars. We're fully funded on our own operations.
I think that's important to talk about to people, because the best analogy that I can give you, listeners, is in many school districts, they've separated their school lunch program from, I know when I was in school, it was all one big pot. But in many school districts now, they're separate. So the district is not subsidizing the lunch program. You know, there's independent people who do that, and whatever it costs, that's what you got to pay for your lunch, you know. And it might be a weak analogy, but that's what the federal government did with the Postal Service. So just so you know that taxpayer dollars are not being used to subsidize the postal system.
Yeah, it is the ratepayers.
But here's the kicker, at least for me, and I don't have any skin in the game here, and maybe you folks are not free to comment on this, but okay, I can understand why the federal government would do that. But yet, if you need a rate increase to cover your expenses, you got to go to them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, to me, you know, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I think I can comment on that to the point where I think the Postmaster General has been pretty clear. If you want us to continue to operate with the universal service mandate, which means that we go to every house every day, no matter the fact that, you know, volume's continuing to decline, stops grow as you drive out anywhere. We're still building houses. So every year we add around 100, 150 million more delivery points that we have to service. But yet, we aren't getting any help from our congressmen and our senators, you know, to make some postal reform. So I think we all would agree at the Postal Service that it's kind of a catch-22. You can't tell us to continue to operate in the ways that we are and yet keep costs as low as they are, or not give us a rate increase. So yeah, that's a feeling I think all postal employees probably share.
Right. Uh-huh. I think they have to come up with some kind of plan where they have some flexibility for our pricing.
Well, as an outsider, as I say, I don't have any skin in the game, but it doesn't seem to make sense to me. You know, if you need to raise rates, then raise the rates. You shouldn't have to rely on somebody else to, you know, give you the okay.
Right.
We'll take a quick break, but we'll continue. I have more questions, and we'll talk a little bit more about Stamp Out Hunger as well. One of our sponsors on the program today is Schnoor's Greenhouse, family-owned and operated since, you ready for this, 1889. That doesn't go back quite as far as the U.S. Postal Service, but it's a long time ago. Yes, Schnoor's Greenhouse, believe it or not, celebrating 130 years in business. It's been the place to grow for a long time around here. They're located off Herman Road. Look for Schnoor Road near the RC Men's Club, and they are just loaded right now with annuals, beautiful flowers, hanging baskets, vegetable plants, tremendous selection from which to choose. Perfect stop for Mother's Day, too. That's this Sunday, don't forget. Gift cards, they offer those as well. It's Butler's longtime trusted greenhouse, Schnoor's. They're open Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., Saturdays, 8 to 5, Sunday, 11 to 5. Schnoor's Greenhouse, the place to grow. We'll be right back.
On May 21st, I'm voting for Attorney Wink Robinson to serve as Butler County's next Common Pleas Court judge. I urge you to join with me and support him with your vote. This is Attorney Ray Conlon. I've known Wink both professionally and personally for nearly 3 decades. He's the most experienced candidate, possesses a solid knowledge of the law, has respect for others, and exhibits unquestionable ethical standards. Attorney Wink Robinson is clearly the right choice to serve as judge for all Butler County citizens. Please join me and thank Wink on May 21st.
paid for by the candidate, William Wink Robinson.
Do you have missing teeth or wear dentures? You may have heard of or are considering dental implants. Hi, this is Dr. Bob Todd of Butler Smiles Dental Care. There are many options available with dental implants, and making the right choice can be confusing. I have been placing dental implants since 2004, both full-size traditional implants and small diameter or mini dental implants. There are indications for both, but more and more we are using mini dental implants in a variety of innovative ways. They are easier to place, causing less discomfort, are less costly, and can frequently be used immediately after placement, allowing you to get back to eating the foods you like or smiling again right away. Traditional implants typically have a 4-month healing time before they can be used. I invite you to call our office at 282-7774 to schedule a free consultation to see if mini dental implants are the right solution for your dental problems, or visit us on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Tomorrow, folks, is Stamp Out Hunger Day, as postal auto carriers across the country are going to be collecting non-perishable food items, so don't forget to set out a couple of cans or maybe a bag or two. Not too much, because letter carriers have...
We'll find a way to get it.
In some cases, you double up, you have extra help, right?
Yeah, Susan can comment that we have the retirees come in.
Really?
Right. Oh, nice. We have 5 or 6 retirees coming in. So if you see people out there picking up food that aren't in uniform, don't be alarmed, because they are helping us. They come back, and it's nice because they know where to find the carriers, and they can help get some of the food off of us, kind of alleviate some of the burden off us, because we are trying to deliver mail. We have full trucks, you know, with mail, so mm-hmm. we're trying to get rid of mail so that we have room for the food, and so it can get hard to do. So they are a big help to us. We couldn't do it without them.
What time does a letter carrier have to get up and report to work in the morning, Sue Hoover?
7:30 usually. Mm-hmm. 7:30.
And what's the first thing you do? Do you actually have to sort stuff, or has that already been sorted for you and you just pick it up and start delivering?
It's sorted to our route, and then we put it in route sequence for ourselves. So we spend about an hour in the office getting ready to get all, you know, our mail, our parcels, everything in order in the line of sequence for our routes.
Does the same person deliver letters and magazines as delivers boxes and parcels, or is that a separate operation?
Now, for the most part, everybody does all the mail types for their own route. There are times where they have express mail, so they might be running express mails and parcels in the afternoon that come in later. But for the most part, everything should be ready for that route in the morning.
I've seen in the city of Butler on Sunday afternoon, mail trucks going out delivering packages. Matt, what's that? Is that like extra special delivery or something?
Yes, sir. That is the extra special delivery for Amazon. We deliver strictly Amazon Sunday packages. So if you order something on Friday night from Amazon and it tells you it'll arrive Sunday, we're the ones bringing it to you. So that's what we're out there doing on Sundays.
So the parcel delivery has been a big boost for the U.S. Postal Service then in recent years, huh?
Yes, it has. It's been our one growing product. You know, every other product line is shrinking, and parcels have been our one growing product. You know, I think we all can recognize that online shipping is fast, easy, and convenient, and everybody seems to love it. So we are, as an organization, one of the largest, I think the single largest e-commerce shipper in the world. You know, we handle mail volumes from all types of businesses, whether it be someone the size of Amazon or Sportsman Supply right up the road. You know, they're mm-hmm. one of our large mailers out of here in Butler. So we touch everywhere every day, and you know, we do recognize that packages are a big part of the business.
Mail service, as I recall from my history class back in elementary school, wasn't it Benjamin Franklin who was one of the movers and shakers in getting the U.S. postal system going?
He was the first postmaster general.
Yes. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was. Yes, okay. Yes, he was instrumental in developing our communication system. You know, that's basically what I call the post office. It was our communication system mm-hmm. up until, you know, 10 or so years ago, until the internet really took things over.
The changing ways are affecting other countries as well. I saw a story not too long ago where Great Britain, the United Kingdom, was thinking of selling their mail service, privatizing it, taking it out of government hands because of some of the same situations we're facing here in the U.S. People aren't writing as many letters anymore. listeners, when's the last time you wrote a letter to somebody, right? And mailed it. Greeting cards are still used, but you know, sitting down and actually writing a letter, not too often. Some folks are still paying bills by mail. Some folks are half and half. Some folks are doing it all electronically. But parcel delivery is big.
Yes, sir.
It's big. And I've also been following things in Ireland because of my Irish heritage. And their postal service is called On Post, A-N-P-O-S-T, two words, On Post. And their biggest problem now is trying to maintain On Post stations in some of these really tiny villages because it's just not economically feasible anymore. And yet when they decide they're going to close an on-post office, then the people in the village are up in arms, you know, and oh, we've always had a post office. How can you do this? But it's simply a matter of economics, Matt.
And yeah, absolutely. And those same sentiments are echoed over here on this side of the pond. As you know, many years ago, we went around and that was our plan, was to close post offices. And that's why we ended up, you know, we got the fierce public resistance and governmental resistance from our partners in the House and Senate. And we ended up with the 2, 4, and 6-hour post offices. You know, like we have two of them that we're in charge of here in Butler. Herman Post Office went down to that's open for 4 hours a day. And then East Butler Post Office is open 6 hours a day spread across an 8-hour, you know, operating window. They close for lunch out there. But that's happened in all your small towns and your non-delivery post offices, that we've had to find a fine balance between keeping it open and offering some service and trying to make a buck out of the operation.
Do they still have postmasters at all those places?
They do not. Those postmasters were all either retired, you know, they offered retirements or they right-sized them into a new position. And all that works in those offices are clerks. Just like the regular window clerk that we'd have in Butler. They're responsible for everything in those installations.
So we've had downsizing, attempting to meet the problem.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But we just haven't, you know, we're not able to shed as many people as, you know, we still have to keep a certain amount of workforce to get the job done. And we're just not able to take the workforce as low as it would need to be under the business model that we operate under right now.
I had a trivia question going a few weeks ago here at the station. What's the cost of a first-class stamp right now? And nobody knew.
What?
Because everybody uses the forever
stamps. I don't know. That, right.
Can you buy stamps in denominations anymore? Is it all forever stamps?
Everything is pretty much forever. You can still get some 1-centers and 10-centers and things of that nature if you need them. But they're starting to phase those out because it just cost us a lot of money to. You know, a lot of people when they call when stamps go up and ask, well, how are you able to do that? Well, it is actually cheaper for us to, you know, stamps went up 5 cents this last increase. It's cheaper for us to let everybody keep the stamps they have, not have to print all the extra stamps and then, you know, end up destroying all the stuff that we didn't need. So it's actually good for the environment and good for our profit margins.
So what is the current cost of a first class stamp?
55 cents.
55 cents. And it just went up a nickel not too long ago.
I want to say January.
Yeah, end of January.
Yeah. I've argued this with people for years. I still think it's a heck of a deal. You know, some of the bills that I pay go to Colorado. There's one that goes to Colorado. There's one that goes to Kansas. So I can write out a check, put it in an envelope, slap a 55-cent stamp on it, and 2 days later it's in Kansas or Colorado. That's a pretty good deal for 50 cents, you know, or thereabouts, really.
Yes, it is.
And, you know, people can say, well, I can remember when it was.
I can remember when gas was, you know, a dollar a gallon.
And bread was 10 cents a loaf, you know. Times change.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think it's still, you know, a can of pop you used to be able to get for 50 cents. I think that's a dollar now. You definitely get more value out of a stamp than you do out of drinking a can of pop. If you're mailing a letter from here to California for 55 cents, it's an incredible deal. I look at it as one of our national treasures that, you know, you're still able, no matter who you are, where you are, what your station in life, that you can communicate with whoever you want to. You know, to have the internet, you need to be able to pay a phone bill, you know, all those things that to write a letter to Sue and tell her, hey, happy birthday, cost you 55 cents and a piece of paper, you know. So it's a great value, and it's really something that we as Americans should look at and be proud that to have the Postal Service.
And I think it's a question where people are just so used to it that they don't really think about it that much.
Right.
So you hear about an increase in the price of a stamp, and, you know, some people get very vocal about it, and they say, well, think about this for a second. You take this envelope and you drop it in a slot, and 3 days later it's in there, sometimes in another part of the world.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good deal. No, you were going to say something, Sue.
I was just saying, I think people still enjoy getting cards, personal cards and stuff in the mail.
Absolutely.
I know kids
absolutely.
Do, and your you know, grandparents, you know, they love getting that stuff in the mail.
I do.
I do as well.
Yeah. So keep sending stuff. Stamp Out Hunger is tomorrow. You can put stuff out as early as you want, right? Because some of the postal carriers come around pretty early.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Most people don't hit the street till around 9 o'clock, yep. 9:30.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah,
okay. Well, we don't have to worry about it being too cold or anything tomorrow, and it's not supposed to rain, so that would be
no,
a good thing.
That's a big plus for us. Yeah. It's a big plus because when it like you said, when it's raining, people are reluctant to put things out of the box, so their face is going to get wet. So,
what's the worst time of the year for a letter carrier? The dead of January or the heat of August?
Well, you're asking me. It's winter. I hate winter, so I'll take the heat.
I'm with you, Sue. I'm with you. You mentioned something, Matt, a couple of minutes ago about delivery points. Do you have any idea how many there are from out of the Butler
in
Post
Butler,
Office?
We're roughly, and I haven't looked at my stats lately, but we hover around 29 to 30,000 physical delivery points that we hit on a daily basis. 20,000 on our city routes and around like 8 to 10,000 on our rural routes, which would be out in our outlying townships.
Again, listeners, think about those numbers. That's a lot of delivery points on a daily basis.
Every day.
Yeah. 55 cents.
With 43 people that go out there every day and do that. We have 43 routes in Butler, 29 city, or actually 42, 29 city and 13 rural, and every day they service 30,000 delivery points between the 42 of them.
When you drop something in the mail at the Butler Post Office, it goes to where? Newcastle?
Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh now.
Yes. Yeah, pretty much all the mail, believe it or not. I think out by Johnstown, that mail stays local. State College flows to Altoona. That stays out there. But Erie mail as far as from Erie, comes down to Pittsburgh at night, gets canceled, and then goes back out, to wherever it's going in the country for delivery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A lot of folks find it difficult to understand how that's cheaper than canceling it at your local post office when you have to take it. Like, for example, if you're mailing something here in Butler to somebody else in Butler, there used to be a slot in the post office, local mail only. But I guess it's the mechanization now, the cancellation process.
We have machines down there that can sort and cancel 30,000 pieces of mail in an hour. And the interesting thing that a lot of people don't know is, say if Sue picks up a piece of mail, puts it in her tub full of letters, our mail handler touches the tub, dumps that in a bigger container. That bigger container gets dumped into a machine, and there starts its journey through the post office. Until it ends up, say if it's coming back to Butler on to, Sue's neighbor's route, it might not be ever touched by another human hand until it is placed back into the mailbox for delivery. Some offices are at 95%, some are at 98% of the mail, letter mail especially, is touched at induction and touched at delivery, two physical touches, of the single piece. So that is how it is economical to send it down there. We have automated and mechanized pretty much all the things that we do with the processing of the mail.
All in all, it works pretty good these days, I think.
Yeah, yeah, I have to say, I think it's pretty good.
Benjamin Franklin would be proud. Thanks for stopping in today.
Hey, Dave, if I could steal 1 minute, I did want to mention
we are
coming into the summer months, and I wanted to talk about dogs and dog bites. We've been fortunate in Butler that we've had maybe one dog bite in the last 2 years, but just last year alone, 5,714 mailmen across the country were bit by dogs. We encourage our mailmen to stay away from the dogs. Sue might like a dog on her route, but her substitute might be deathly afraid of dogs. So we ask, keep them away from the mailman. Keep them inside when you know that we're going to be on your street. We are there generally every day around the same 1-2 hour window. And remember that your dog does bite. It might not, bite you, but mailmen, mail trucks, they have a special way of making dogs irate. I guess it's that we come to their house every day. We walk onto your property, we walk off, we act like we own the place, and dogs are territorial. So, never think that a dog can't attack one of our mail ladies or mailmen, and we don't want anyone to get hurt. I've seen some very nasty dog bites throughout my career that can impact one's life. And at the end of the day, the most important thing to me is that, Sue comes back safe and the other 41 people come back safe. So that I just wanted to get that in. We're coming into the summer months, and we're going to have the dogs out, so let's try to keep them away when the mailmen are there. So, and I appreciate you having us on, Dave.
Oh, my pleasure.
Thank you.
And a good point about the dogs, too. Matt Kucinich is the postmaster of the U.S. Post Office here in Butler, and Sue Hoover, letter carrier. Nice to have you here today.
Thank you very much.
Stick around. We have another candidate chat coming up, another candidate for judge here in Butler, so we'll be back to talk to her right after these words.
Thank you.
Butler Health System is a top 100 hospital for getting Doug back to playing with his grandkids and managing his farm.
For ensuring that Craig made it to his daughter's college graduation.
For helping Ray travel to Europe to visit his family.
At Butler Health System, we know what it takes to provide nationally recognized care. But more importantly, we know why we have to.
Caring hands, remarkable minds. That's Butler Health System.
Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler can answer your questions about cremation. Is it appropriate for your loved ones? Should there be a funeral service? Keep in mind that even with cremation, it is time to celebrate how meaningful and important was the life of your loved one. Is cremation appropriate for your family? How would they feel about it? And what's the cost? Cremation has three advantages: simplicity, convenience, and it's local. The Thompson Miller Cremation Program is right here in Butler at our newly created facility. We assure you that your loved one will never leave our care at any point in the process. So let's talk it over privately right here at Thompson Miller in Butler. Call us at 724-287-3706, 287-3706, or online at www.thompson-miller.com. Thompson Miller, at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, time-honored excellence.
Welcome back, folks. We have another candidate chat here today. Chatting with the candidate for judge in the Court of Common Pleas here in Butler County. We welcome Jennifer Gilliland of Annisdale. Here in the studio. Jennifer, good to see you.
Good to see you. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
The election is coming up May 21st, which is, gosh, a week from this coming Tuesday.
Right.
Gets here pretty quickly.
It does. Mm. I'm excited.
Well, tell us a little bit, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself. Who is Jennifer Gilliland of Annisdale?
Great. Well, thank you. You know, I'm a hard worker. You know, I went to Butler High School. I graduated in 1989, so I'm a lifelong Butler County resident, and I'm really proud of that because I feel that I really know our community well. Mm. Upon graduation from high school, I went to college, went to IUP, and after IUP, I started working downtown Butler at Nationwide Insurance, and I worked there from 1993 to 2001. While I was working at Nationwide Insurance, I embarked upon law school, and I traveled full-time working downtown Butler to Duquesne University School of Law for 4 years, and it was a lot of work, but, you know, I really did well at my job at Nationwide, and I did well at law school, and I think that's a testament to my work ethic and my commitment to do what's right. And to always, you know, strive to better myself and to better my employer. And in this case, you know, I want to better the community. You know, while working full-time and going to law school, I still graduated in the top 20 in my class. I was actually named Phi Delta Phi Graduate of the Year. After law school, I opened up our law firm, and we built that law firm from the ground up. And, you know, almost 20 years in business, and we're really proud of that. You know, we built the office in Cranberry Township right on Route 228 before it was the 228 that it is now. I'm really, you know, we're really proud of our building there, and we're equally as proud that we invested in downtown Butler. You know, we bought the old Working Man Store building that Al Rosenberg and his family owned, and that was just a great transition for Al and us, and we took a lot of time to restore that building. And, you know, so we're really committed and invested into Butler County. You know, we've serviced over 3,000 clients. And, you know, I'm really proud in the fact that I always try to do what's right for my clients and for the community. You know, I'm the only candidate that's running that has been rated AV Preeminent by Martindale Hubbell. That is the highest rating for both professional standards and ethics. And I have that rating in both general practice, family law, estates, probate, and litigation. So I'm tried and tested, and I'm ready and willing and able to do this job. And I'm really excited and looking forward to it.
Why did you decide to run for judge, Jennifer?
Well, that's a really good question. You know, in October 2017, I learned that, you know, we had some systematic issues that really came to the forefront. And, you know, I really enjoyed my practice. And I didn't consider myself at that point in time that I was ready to leave my practice, but I felt that it was needed to make a change. And what really came out of my commitment to making a change was the passion that I have for the courts and our family. You know, as now I see you have my mailer, as now many people now know, you know, I'm a product of the court system. And so when I saw the issues, I just couldn't sit back. You know, I put myself in that situation. I put my family in that situation. And I put those children that need forever homes, you know, those families that need decisions. And we need judges that are accountable. You know, judges are not above the law. You know, we can't have a judge that has distraction. We can't have a judge that doesn't see that the decisions and how they interact with the parties and the litigants changes the family forever. You know, there's a big cost to parties that are in court, and the cost isn't just financial, it's emotional. And I know that firsthand. So I really just thought that, you know what, I'm going to make a position, I'm going to take a stand and do what's right. And so that is why I decided to run. I also know that I'm the best, in my opinion, qualified to make a difference. And I have the right experience to do the job and to do the job well for everybody. You know, that's really important when I say everybody. You know, I think it's important that, you know, we're in a small county. And we need a judge that's going to be there for all people. You know, we cannot have the good old ways. We have to do better. It can't be who you know. It has to be the individual facts of that case. And I'm really, you know, I'm really fighting hard for that. And I'm really excited to do so because I know it's the right time.
So you would like to see some changes made then in the way the court system operates here in the county?
I would, yes. You know, and first and foremost, you know, I want to make certain that we eliminate nepotism and favoritism. You know, it can't be, we can't have court appointments based on relationships with parties. And that, to me, seems to be so easy that I can't even believe I have to stand up and say that. You know, if you have a relative that works in the court system, you shouldn't have a spouse be appointed. You know, and even though there might not be, you know, any abuse, it has the appearance of impropriety. You know, I mean, we're all married. If you upset a spouse, then, you know, it goes back to your home. And we need to make certain that litigants don't feel that their cases are impacted by who you know. We also have to make certain that, you know, we're more efficient. You know, I don't think that parties should have to expend cost for court appointments. They already pay taxes. You know, court appointments should be limited in limited circumstances. You know, as judges, we should know what's best, and only in limited circumstances should we have court appointments, whether it be, you know, in the family court system, guardian ad litems, whether it be court-appointed psychologists. You know, it can't be on every case. You know, a court-appointed psychologist is over $4,000 just in a custody case. And, you know, I've tried many, many custody cases, and I've been involved in family court, you know, now going on 18 years. That shouldn't be the standard. You know, judges should be able to look at the factors of custody, and only in isolated situations, in my mind, should we have to have the parties incur those costs, because they already incurring costs with court costs, with attorneys in most situations, and the most important cost is their emotional costs. And all those appointments do is add financial costs and delays. And I want to see that that's changed. I also want to make certain that cases are moved forward in a more positive and a more efficient manner. You know, right now we have motions court, and a lot of times when we go to motions court, all we do is have delays. We push the ball. You know, we need to be able to make decisions in motions court, and I want to make certain, too, that when we have judicial conferences, right now, you know, a lot of times lawyers, they go into the judges' chambers. And so the parties, they don't see what is going on, and we don't have accountability for what lawyers say in chambers. And I think it's more, you know, it would better advance a case if everybody was open in the courtroom and everybody was on the record, so we could really try to sort through the issues, see what issues there are and what issues maybe there aren't, and really try to come to a resolution so the parties can move forward and move on with their lives.
One of our sponsors, we have a few more questions for Jennifer Gill and Vanisdale. One of our sponsors on the program today is Miller's Shoes. 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler. Well, the warm weather is here, and maybe that means new tennis shoes. They've got them in a tremendous number of famous name brands for the whole family, men, women, teens, kids. Miller's has Nike and New Balance and Saucony and Rockport and Keds and Skechers and Easy Spirits and Asics and Pro-Pet. Can you imagine that? All under one roof. You don't have to go to three or four different places. Miller Shoes, also your local headquarters for the famous SAS Comfort Shoes for men and women. And boy, they are comfortable. They're like bedroom slippers. And SAS also makes sandals, too, in a variety of styles and colors. So stop in and try a pair on. Miller's Shoes, a tradition for over 125 years here in the Butler area. 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler, Miller's Shoes. We're chatting with Jennifer Gilliland of Annisdale, who is a candidate for judge. There's a vacancy on the Butler County Court of Common Pleas right now, and that's because Judge Marilyn Oran, former Common Pleas Judge Marilyn Oran, has been appointed to the federal bench. So we are filling that vacancy, and we have a primary coming up on the 21st. Are you cross-filed in both primaries, Jennifer?
Yes, I am, and I'm very proud of that. You know, I want to be a judge for all people. You know, I had the most signatures of any judicial candidate in our county. I had over 2,100 signatures. I'm told I had the most signatures in the entire state for a Common Pleas race. I worked really hard, and that's how I'm going to be on the bench. You know, I think it's important that our judges are independent, and, you know, I'm really looking forward to hopefully having that opportunity. And being elected by both Democrats and Republicans, that's really important for me.
What qualities do you think that a judge must have in this day and age?
Well, I think that a judge needs to be independent, you know, and I am independent. You know, I am working hard for all people. I am self-funding my race. And when I say self-funding, I truly mean self-funding. You know, there's people saying that they're self-funding, but they have a lot of lawyers working for them. And so really they're having help of the same lawyers that are going to go in front of them. You know, I think it's important that you have an independent voice on the bench. And everybody that knows me knows that I'm going to be tough, but I'm always fair. And as a matter of fact, when my mom, Sandy Gilliland, stated to me, you know, I'm sad that you're running for judge in the sense that I think you're going to miss your practice. She's like, but I'm really happy for the community. She's like, because you know what? You're going to be tough, but you're always fair. And, you know, I was really honored for my mom to say that because she's a good judge. And I think that that's really the most important thing, is that you have a judge that is tough but is also fair. And I also think it's important that you have a judge that has the right experience. You know, I've had been handling cases for over 17 years in private practice, and prior to that, I was involved in civil cases from an insurance perspective for almost 10 years. So I've been involved in the court system for over 25 years. And I think it's important as a judge that we have, you know, well-rounded experience, and that we know, you know, a case that comes before us, that we've seen it in some way, and that we can come to a decision based on both the law, the facts, and both, you know, also on our experience. And, you know, I think one of the attributes that I have is that I'm good at finding resolution for cases. I always tell clients when they come to my office, you know, that failure is not an option and that you're in a bad situation, but we have to make it be positive. And I really want to inspire people in the court to look at their cases that way. You know, I'm looking at the mailer here that you brought in, and, you know, as many people now know, you know, I started with nothing. You know, I started without even a name. And, you know, I really want to inspire people, in particular children and families, to say, listen, you may be in a tough situation, but with the help of the court, with the help of a family that you're hopefully going to have, anything is possible. You know, I want to be able to relate with the parties because I've been there, and I know that they can overcome, and I really want to make a positive difference to people in the courtroom.
Would you be okay? Would you be prepared to serve in other areas other than family law?
Yes, absolutely. As I stated earlier, you know, I'm AV rated first and foremost in general practice. So I've handled just about every type of case that you can think of. And I'm really proud of that because I like the diversity of our practice. You know, I think it is a foregone conclusion at this point because we do have an empty seat in the family court that's where I will serve. But I'm equally excited to go anywhere that may be needed in the courts because the core qualities that I possess, and that is the independence, the tough but the fairness, and the passion for the courts, will serve me well in any area of the law. And certainly my skill set has already been adjudged by my peers and by Martindale Hubbell by having the highest rating. And again, I'm the only candidate that has gone through that, you know, that review process. And I'm rated at the highest level on general practice, on family law, and on estates, on litigation. So I know that I'm more than able and ready and willing to serve in any area of the law in the court.
Well, before we give Jennifer a chance to wrap up here and kind of summarize, I'd just like to emphasize when we do our candidate chats here on the It's Your Turn program, our only purpose is to introduce you, the listeners, to candidates. We're obviously not favoring anyone one way or another. We just want to make sure that you have the best chance to make an informed judgment whenever you go to the polls. It's as simple as that. And I always like to wrap up a candidate chat by giving the candidate a minute or so, whatever you want, to just kind of summarize and to suggest why people might want to consider voting for you on May 21st. Jennifer Gilliland of Annisdale.
Well, thank you again for this opportunity. I really do appreciate it. You know, as I stated to many people that I've met, I would appreciate their vote because I'm a hard worker. You know, I'm just like many of us in Butler County. You know, I do not come from a family of attorneys. You know, I come from a family of hard work, and I am not looking at this job as a bookend to my career. I'm not looking at this job for a pension, for a health insurance, or for a pay increase. I'm looking at this job because I know that we need a change, and I know that I'm the only person that has stood up and said that I want to see that change happens, and I'm more than ready, willing, and able to do that. You know, one person can make a difference. And I feel that I can make a difference. I'm really excited because I feel with my unique experience, and when I say unique experience, not just from an education and a law practice, but my personal commitment, my personal passion, I really believe that this is my time to do what's right and to give back because I wouldn't be sitting here without the court system in 1971. And I'm really honored to be here. And I really just want to see that the court system is